Tax Hour, Our Nation. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. Joining us for the next hour is Stephen Kinzer. He has a website, stephenkinzer.com, and I found a book of his by accident, looking for, I guess it's no accident, maybe it's like some kind of divine inclination here to share this with the world. He had a book, and I was looking up something probably for MK Ultra, and I found the book Poisoner in Chief, and then I went to the website, and there was a contact thing, and I said, why don't you come on Power Hour? And he said, yes. And then I went and bought the book, and I liked it even before I was through it much. I went out and got another one, his other book, The Brothers, John Foster Dulles, Alan Dulles, and Their Secret World War. And I was just very, very happy that I made these selections in books. One for a lot of people who are into knowledge, to history, to teaching your children well. You cannot go wrong buying Stephen Kinzer's books because they're concise, accurate, just a punch to the solar plexus of information. Some of it is difficult when you read Poisoner in Chief. It's not a happy story. It's a story of just terrible things done to people under the guise of so-called national security. And there are probably things that you don't want to talk about at the dinner table. But they happen. They're real. And I think I really believe in that old adage, bad things happen when good people do nothing. And we can't do nothing. We have to do something. And part of it is becoming informed and teaching others the truth, because ultimately it will set us free. And it's more than a slogan on the CIA wall. It's Jesus' message, too. And I believe that truth liberates us, even some of the nasty things. Welcome, Stephen. And tell us something about yourself, how you got into the book writing business. I understand you were a reporter as well.
That's true. Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. These are some great topics to talk about, and sometimes they're condensed into 2 or 3 minute sound bites. We're going to be able to do a little better than that. So you're right. I had a long career as a journalist. I worked for the New York Times for more than 20 years. I was a foreign correspondent posted in Central America. Then I was in Europe as a Berlin bureau chief. I went out and lived in Turkey for a while, covered Central Asia and the Caucasus. So I've seen a number of parts of the world. After I left the New York Times some 15 years ago, I wanted to move into something a little bit more deliberative. I was realizing that I saw so much happen during those years, and it all went by so fast. Now I want to take a little time and try to figure out what it all meant and try to put it together. So I've devoted my book writing career to trying to determine and figure out what goes on behind the facade of public policy and public politics and public diplomacy that we can see. I think maybe my little bit odd perspective of not jumping to cheer for all American foreign policy decisions and all American interventions might come from the fact that I was posted in countries that essentially were the victims of American foreign policy. I didn't learn about U.S. foreign policy in Washington from the perspective of the perpetrators. I was on the other end of it. So this book that you just referred to, Poisoner in Chief, the book about the CIA mind control projects in the 1950s and into the 60s, is my 10th book. Many of the things that I've discovered in my books have surprised me. I think they've shocked some people. But this time, with this book, Poisoner in Chief, I have to say, this is the first time I have been shocked. I still can't believe my own book. I can't believe that this project ever happened, and I can't believe that this guy, Sidney Gottlieb, the unknown invisible figure behind MKUltra, really lived. So my book is an attempt essentially to write a biography of this guy, Sidney Gottlieb, who ran the MKUltra program. And Sidney Gottlieb was a man who essentially was invisible. So I'm writing a book about a guy who, in a certain way, didn't exist, and trying to piece together his life and this amazingly bizarre project that was certainly the most brutal and extreme in terms of human experimentation ever launched by any officer or agency of the U.S. government. So it has been quite a a voyage for me writing this book. And as you said, it's not a happy story. I don't like to tell people you'll enjoy this book or this book will be fun, but I do think it will do for readers what it has done for me, which is to open up some pieces of American history that have been kept very closely hidden for a long time.
Well, part of, I guess, the distressing events of the thing is our enemies in World War II that we consider war criminals were openly embraced for their research and their criminality, which is like I've studied Unit 731, the Japanese place, and I've seen a Chinese movie on it that is very difficult to watch. And so even though it's an older movie and they don't have the technical graphics like we have today and such like that, the whole concept of just the brutality of what was done to human beings, and that the orchestrator there, Shiro Ishii, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, is embraced and accepted into our military-industrial complex to bring the results of his tortures and abuses, and then the General Walter Schreiber, the Surgeon General of the Nazis, coming on board and bringing his official repertoire of horror into our fold to prepare our military, our intelligence agencies, to continue and do the same thing, primarily to unsuspecting people. And that's probably what is the most horrific part of the whole story, was that, you know, these people were unsuspecting. Like, one man was just poisoned because he happened to walk into a bar in Paris or cafe that Gottlieb was in, and they put LSD in his drink and didn't tell him. And he suffered horrible effects, ruined his life. For what?
You're absolutely right. So the aspect of the Nazis is particularly interesting and shocking, really. So as Gottlieb and the other CIA scientists began the project of trying to figure out how to find a way to control the human mind, their first insight was that before you could find a way to insert a new mind into somebody's brain, you first had to blast away the mind that was in there. How do you do that? Well, that was the basis of all these horrific experiments in which these so many lives were destroyed, and we don't know how many people were killed, in efforts to try to find out how to destroy a human mind and a human body and a human spirit. As these projects were launched, these scientists, with a very logical, scientific rationality, asked themselves, what research already exists about this? Where do we find people that are already experts in this subject? You would do this in any scientific research project. So they looked around and said, well, who are experts that are out there that know how to destroy human beings? And the people they came up with were the Nazis who had worked in the concentration camps conducting those horrific experiments, often fatal on inmates, and their Japanese counterparts, who, as you pointed out, actually carried out some experiments that were even more grotesque than what was done at the Nazi concentration camps. So the CIA went out and started hiring Nazis and people that had worked in this vivisection shop for the Imperial Japanese. They became integral parts of MKUltra, and actually MKUltra was built on the foundation of experiments that were carried out in the concentration camps and at analogous sites in Japan. So when I was researching this book, I went to Germany, and I found what I think maybe the first ever CIA secret prison. It's one of the places where these unfortunate people, who the CIA called expendables, were taken to be subjects of experiments, and in some cases experimented to death. The guy who owns that lovely chalet now, with a former CIA secret prison, took me in, and he brought me down to the basement. He said, these storerooms were the cells where the CIA doctors and their Nazi counterparts carried out experiments that were actually just continuations of the experiments that the Nazis had been conducting in their concentration camps right down the road. And he also told me older people who live in this neighborhood or in this area have come over to tell me that when this project was going on in the 50s, the CIA doctors buried the bodies of those people who died under experimentation in the forests right around here in places that are now covered over with shopping malls and apartment blocks. So perhaps the most astonishing footnote to all of this is that Sidney Gottlieb, the director of MKUltra, who oversaw all these gruesome experiments and worked so closely with, as you said, the Surgeon General of the Nazi Army, the chief of the biowarfare program for the Hitler government, was Jewish. And in fact, his parents had emigrated from Central Europe in the early part of the 20th century. If they hadn't done that, if they had stayed in Europe, quite possibly they would have been swept up by the Nazis, and young Sidney might well have wound up being the victim of one of those horrific concentration camp experiments. But he didn't seem to have any problem working shoulder to shoulder with the doctors who had carried out those experiments in the Nazi camps. So the whole psychology that goes into Gottlieb and this project is endlessly fascinating, in addition to being quite shocking.
Oh, indeed. One of the other, you know, bizarre facets is they set up shop here in New York City and in San Francisco with safe houses with a chap named George Hunter White, who in any other world, in any type of scenario, he should be somebody doing hard time in a cell with Charles Manson. And, you know, he's recruited for his law enforcement experience, primarily because he was an agent with the DEA, and taken into the CIA to bring in an area of expertise of evil to operate these safe houses where they poisoned people, extracted information from people, and, you know, he openly admits to murdering people. It is just, you know, beyond belief that this is happening, you know, in a neighborhood near you, perhaps.
So George Hunter White was really one of the most bizarre characters in this astonishing MKUltra drama. And the project he ran in San Francisco really is an example of how far off the rails these people got. So Gottlieb hired George Hunter White, who had been, as you said, he was a federal drug agent, but he was also one of those lawmen that lived well outside the law. He was a heavy user of drugs himself. He always took a portion for himself of whatever he threw other people in jail for using. And one of the projects that Gottlieb had this guy administer or set up was in San Francisco. Gottlieb was looking for all different ways of using drugs and hypnosis and electroshock and sensory deprivation and all kinds of torments to find a way to destroy or take control of human minds. So at one point he decided, how about trying to test what would happen if various drugs were administered to people during or just before the time when they were having sex? What would be the combination of sex and drugs as a possible way to get people to talk or make them disoriented? So he had George Hunter White set up what amounted to a bordello in San Francisco on Telegraph Hill. They hired a handful of prostitutes and got them to bring their customers back to this safe house on Chestnut Street overlooking San Francisco Bay. There, they would be given drinks that had been tainted with either LSD or whatever drug Gottlieb decided he wanted to try that week. And then, through a one-way mirror, this grotesquely obese George Hunter White would be watching what happened, sitting on his portable toilet, drinking martinis out of a pitcher, and making occasional notes. This operation was called Operation Midnight Climax. It was so far beyond the bounds of science. I mean, this guy, White, for whatever qualities he might have had, knew nothing about science or psychology. So here you have the CIA running essentially a national security bordello, using American taxpayers' money to pay prostitutes to bring men into a home and then drug them. And all this was done as a way to protect America from its communist enemies. You can see by this how far these imaginations went and how much they considered justified, regardless of the suffering that it brought to the victims.
Oh, indeed. One, you know, just important factoid that people have to understand is the CIA tried to destroy, like Gottlieb destroyed, a lot of the official records. But, of course, like anything, when you're cleaning up, you miss a few things. And they did miss a lot of things that were in other areas of storage, like budgeting and such like that. But George Hunter White's correspondence, his diary, ended up being donated to a college and was recovered. And one of the just bizarre things was his letter, where he writes Gottlieb to, you know, I guess thank him for his window of opportunity, and he goes, "Fun, fun, fun. Where else could a red-blooded American boy lie, cheat, steal, rape, and pillage with the sanction and blessing of the All-Highest? Pretty cool stuff, brother." And, we just look at how a nation can run amok, or absolute power corrupts absolutely, where this is being done under the umbrella of you know, what is supposed to be a republic that is supported with a constitution and a Bill of Rights. You know, there should almost be like special laws for violating someone's right to life and liberty, so that you're doing hard time for something like this. But when they have all the cards in their hand, what can you do? You can't get evidence. You can't get at anything. They were using prisoners for these tests, and of course, you have very little credibility as someone on doing hard time in a correctional institution. So they were pretty much tortured and taken apart too. And what were some of these experiments on these prisoners? Because I know one of our guests I had before on issues also mentioned too that, you know, she was sent into these prisons to test various medications for the CIA. And one was a gangster, as I recall, Bulger.
Yes, so you're right that these things that Gottlieb was doing and that MKUltra was doing were far beyond the pale of anything legal. So you have to give Gottlieb a measure of credit for working for an organization that not only allowed him to carry out these horrific acts, but shielded him from the consequences that would normally have been apportioned to any other psychopath who was carrying them out. And the question of him destroying records, really, it's a serious one. I've tried to reconstruct MKUltra and reconstruct Gottlieb's life, but I'm painfully aware that I've only uncovered a small portion of what it was. My favorite line in my book, I think, might be the one at the end where I say, "Everything in this book is true, but not everything that's true is in this book." I know there's a lot out there, including in all those seven cases of files that Gottlieb had destroyed before he left the CIA. The message from all of this, I think, for us today has to do with motivation. Why did they think it was okay to just grab innocent people and essentially torture them, and in many cases torture them to death? The reason was, America's under such a threat. We are on the brink of being totally destroyed as a nation. The world is going to be ruined and turned into a catastrophic wasteland by our enemies if they succeed. Therefore, with a threat so great, the loss of a few lives or a few hundred lives is a very small price to pay. It would be considered foolish or naive to protest against this in the face of such a huge threat. Now, today, in a way, we're being fed a version of this same narrative, that America is under this huge threat. There's terrorism everywhere. The whole world's against us. And therefore, although we are a very virtuous nation and we always obey laws and ethics and morality, there have to be certain exceptional moments, and we happen to be in one of them now. It's very dangerous to be seduced by this. Commitment to a great cause is the best motivation for committing immoral acts. And patriotism is one of the most seductive of those causes. So that is a great trap into which the MKUltra people fell, and into which I think some people are falling today. Now, you asked about the nature of these experiments. Gottlieb was conducting essentially two sets of experiments, inside the United States and outside the United States. The ones outside the United States were probably the most brutal of all, because there was absolutely no check on what Gottlieb could do. He actually had a license to kill from the U.S. government. He could go into a place like Germany or Japan or South Korea and actually requisition from the CIA or from the US military police human beings, prisoners. And they would send him bodies, and he would then be able to do whatever he wanted to those people. That's the people that were called expendables. Inside the United States, Gottlieb had a special interest in carrying out experiments in prisons for obvious reasons. You've got a large stock of people that are totally under the control of their administrators, and the administrators can give favors or withhold them as they wish. So just to take one example, you mentioned Whitey Bulger, the gangster from Boston. He is one of the few people, since he wrote his own diary, who we know as having been a victim of MKUltra. So Whitey Bulger was serving time in a federal penitentiary in Atlanta, Georgia, during the mid-50s. He had been sent there after being convicted of truck hijacking. So while he was there, he was approached by the prison doctor, who was also the chairman of the pharmacology department at Emory University, and told there was research going on to find a cure for schizophrenia. And if Bulger would participate in this experiment, he would get certain privileges in jail. So he agreed to do it. And what happened afterwards was unbelievable. He was fed something. He later figured out it was LSD. Every day for more than a year. And you can imagine what this does to a person's mind. And he wrote about it, how the wild nightmares he had and how he was terrified of telling people in the prison what had happened to him, because he thought, if I say what I see, like the clocks jumping around on the wall and the sky coming to attack me, they'll think I'm crazy and they'll never let me out. Later on, Bulger wanted to go back and try to kill that doctor once he found out what the real motive of those experiments was. And that shows you a level of brutality that was repeated in many federal institutions.
Okay, well, coming up to a break. We'll see you on the other side.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond to Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops.
boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food and storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. 817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores all love to eat. Yum!
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams Probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Welcome back, Power Hour Nation. Joining us today, Stephen Kinzer. I'm your guest host from Canada, George Freund. We're going down a different memory lane. One that, is probably not proudly revealed by governments all over the world to say that they do things like this. I meet people from countries that are despotic and live through events of the police state and are terrified, demoralized, and just turned into, living basket cases. I remember a young fellow I was working with who was, beautiful young man. He was from Morocco. And he told me about his teen years in Morocco. And if you're on the wrong side of anything, they just round people up from the street or a coffee shop, take you in for beatings and torture. And, he had experienced that, the electric shocks, the being hung upside down naked and beaten with a baton and all this sort of thing. He was so happy to be in Canada. But if he was in a public place and a police officer walked close, that cold sweat comes on you very, very quickly. Is it happening again? And this is not a kind of world that I want my children to inherit. I didn't want to, unfortunately I did inherit it. I didn't think I did, but I did inherit things like this. I want this type of stuff swept, not under the rug, but swept out of human ethos, that we just don't do this anymore. And it's not even considered, or I never thought in my life, because I like the medievals and Elizabethan eras of history, too, that we'd ever come back to a time where torture is used, because it's completely ineffective. And as I was discussing on the break with our guest, Brian Mulroney's our prime minister, former prime minister of Canada, his father-in-law, Dr. Dmitry Pivnicki, worked with Dr. Ewan Cameron doing these experiments. I know a woman that I minister to who has all sorts of problems. And, she would always come to me in terrible need many, many times because she's just going over the edge. And somehow it came up in conversation once about this type of program, and then she told me that her father worked for Ewan Cameron. He was a psychiatrist and worked on this project. And then everything made sense about, you know, here's a victim that wasn't even a victim of these experiments, but just from the bad karma or energy around her father, that this, you know, drove her to drink and despair and hopelessness, and that somehow, you know, I've got to put those things aside and get hope into her, that she's here for a reason, that you live for a purpose, and that you can function in society. You don't have to end your life over issues, any issues. And, you know, quite a challenge for me because I'm just the old street copper, but it's not like I haven't done it before. And it was just so glad to spend time with someone like that, that you can pull them out of the abyss and turn them into a functional human being again. That's the art form of being a peace officer, not necessarily a police officer. When we were on another break, you were telling me something very, very profound that I think has to come up, too, that Gottlieb visited Mexico City to see the CIA station chief, Wynne Scott. And he was in a possession. Someone gave me a book for Christmas. I forgot to look up some of the details in it, but he had his own private safe. And his secretary was like one of those James Bond secretaries. And he kept information from all the other agents about things and kept it in this safe. And I remember him being visited, but I don't remember if it was Gottlieb and Angleton who visited him. But the contents of that safe were just toxic, totally toxic. And you were telling me that they went there to see him, and his prognosis for life wasn't very great after that.
You know, when you start investigating MKUltra, as I've spent several years doing, you get very quickly into completely bizarre aspects of psychology and history and politics, and you don't really know where the insane, crazy conspiracy theories end and actual reality begins. I must say that my understanding of what might be possible has been expanded by understanding what MKUltra was and what MKUltra did. So, and since the book has come out, I've had other people write to me and say, what about this? What about that? So, in my books, I only deal strictly with facts. I don't speculate. I'm glad other people do, and people have written to me, for example, about Sirhan, who could not, the assassin of Robert Kennedy, seemed like, was he hypnotized? Could he have been drugged to do that? The case you mentioned is another one that has been brought to my attention since I wrote this book. So Wynne Scott, as you said, was a famous CIA officer. He was the chief of the CIA station in Mexico City. He happened to be there at the time when Lee Harvey Oswald was around and entered the Soviet embassy and the Cuban embassy, so he was very aware of Oswald. He hated the Warren Commission report. He had his own ideas, and he said that they had covered up a lot of things about Oswald. He was going to write a book about this. And Jim Angleton, who was the counterintelligence chief of the CIA, became very upset about this, apparently visited Wynne Scott in Mexico, and then Scott suddenly died. I hadn't really put this all together. So we now know that Angleton and Gottlieb were working closely together at the CIA. So Angleton would have been one of the few people who had direct access to Gottlieb and knew everything Gottlieb was doing. Now, Gottlieb, as the chief chemist of the CIA, knew more about poisons than anybody in America, probably more than anybody in the world. I don't know whether he would have given Angleton a pill. They called it an L pill, L meaning lethal. Would he have given Angleton an L pill to take with him to Mexico? Probably we'll never know, but my willingness to dismiss all of that as absurd fantasy has diminished as I have learned more and more about Gottlieb and what he did. So he maintained a storehouse of poisons out at his base at Camp Dietrich in Maryland outside of Washington, D.C., and these poisons became very useful for American national security when the assassination of foreign leaders became a U.S. policy. In May of 1960, President Eisenhower ordered that Fidel Castro be, as he put it, sawed off. So after that assassination order was given, Gottlieb was asked to produce poisons to kill Fidel Castro. He's the guy that produced the L pills that were taken to Cuba by agents and were supposed to be put into a drink or something that Castro would consume. Gottlieb concocted a box of 50 Cohiba cigars. That was Castro's favorite brand. And he laced them all with botulinum poison, so strong that you wouldn't even have to light the cigar. You just put it in your mouth and you would die. Gottlieb crafted a wetsuit that was supposed to be given as a gift to Castro since he liked scuba diving. And inside it was coated with a fungus that would quickly eat away his skin and cause him to die. Later that same summer in 1960, in August, President Eisenhower ordered the assassination of another foreign leader. That was Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba in the Congo, who was very nationalist and who the Americans had imagined as a great enemy. In this case, Gottlieb not only made the poison, he personally carried it to the Congo and delivered it to the CIA station chief. That makes him definitely the only person in American history who has carried government-made poison to another country for the purpose of assassinating the leader of that country. This was the kind of thing that was his job. And although I think you can hold him quite responsible for this, it's not enough to say you had one crazy guy, you had one psychopath, somebody went really off the rails. That's not correct. That's a way of avoiding the entire institutional responsibility, not only of the CIA, but of the whole U.S. government. It wasn't Gottlieb who decided that these foreign leaders should be assassinated. He was the pharmacist who concocted the poisons. But if you want to look at for the guilty parties, you have to look a lot higher up on the food chain than Sidney Gottlieb.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And speaking of the Kennedy assassination, you know, you had a little fact in your book, too, that just blew me away and, you know, took me to something I did on radio a long, long, long time ago. But you were talking about Gottlieb preparing things for the Watergate burglars, disguises, identification, maybe a couple of little toys to play with and such like that to tie him to that break-in. And quite some time ago, I was doing radio where I found out that a certain individual by the name of Frederick Cheney LaRue was paying the Watergate burglars through the same account he paid three Cubans to go to Dallas in. Shortly after I did that show, Frederick Cheney LaRue was found dead in a hotel room in Biloxi, Mississippi. I didn't realize that at the time until I was doing a show in Toronto and I was scanning through the newspaper and saw the obituary. And so obviously the retirement aims aren't too great, but some of these burglars, Martinez, Eugenio Martinez, and Virgilio Gonzalez, were hot suspects in Dallas back at the time. And we have to speculate to a degree, you know, were they going into this Democratic National Committee building to suffice ends for the election or to get evidence, as listeners know from my guest who wrote the book The Inheritance, who had items from John Kennedy's office that his brother was holding this evidence till he was killed. And, you know, I don't think it would be a good idea to keep some things at home because it's probably more easily acquired. But there may be a whole lot more to the Watergate burglary than just nefarious political aims, especially when it brings down a president. And then the one who takes over is the one who does basically the cover-up job. Ford was notorious for that. And his name comes up in these commissions and investigations later, same with other great heroes of the modern era, Cheney and Rumsfeld.
You're right. So the Watergate burglary, in an indirect way, resulted in the end of Sidney Gottlieb's CIA career after 23 years. So Gottlieb spent the 50s in this incredibly brutal MK Ultra program. Finally, after 10 years of destroying human beings and in some cases destroying them to death, Gottlieb finally concluded something that some psychologists had been trying to tell him all along, which is that mind control is a myth. You cannot program somebody to go out and commit a murder if that person is deeply opposed to committing a murder. That's something you can do in movies. It's happened in a lot of stories by Sherlock that are about Sherlock Holmes or Edgar Allan Poe stories. These guys began to think that this could happen in real life. So after 10 years, Gottlieb essentially reached a dual conclusion. Number one, yes, it is possible to destroy a human mind and a human body. But no, it's not possible to put a new mind in place. Then Gottlieb moved on to the job of being, as I use in the title of my book, the poisoner-in-chief, the guy who made the poisons for Castro and Lumumba and others. But then later in his career, beginning in the mid-60s all the way through the early 70s, he had a very high-ranking position at the CIA. He was the head of the Technical Services Division, which is the organization that makes all the tools and the gadgets that spies and CIA officers use. So if you remember in the James Bond stories, there's this guy Q who's in charge of all the machines and the stuff that's given to CIA to Secret Service officers. Gottlieb was the Q for the CIA, and he produced an astonishing variety of different devices for use in covert operations. It's true that when the Watergate burglars were caught, they were carrying several devices, including a disguise and a voice alteration device and a couple of other things that came from Gottlieb's CIA shop. Soon after the Watergate burglary, President Nixon asked the director of the CIA, Richard Helms, to come up with a story saying that the burglary had to do with American national security and nobody should investigate any further. Helms refused to do that, and Nixon then fired him. Helms had been the great protector of Sidney Gottlieb for 20 years. With him gone, there was no way Gottlieb could survive. So the two of them met, and the one thing they decided is, as we're leaving the CIA, we have to destroy all the documents. And they did destroy 7 crates of MK Ultra documents in a way that was certainly a violation of federal law. The FBI tried to prosecute Gottlieb for destruction of federal property, but his lawyer had come up with a very clever strategy. Gottlieb testified in secret in front of a couple of congressional investigators. The lawyer asked for a guarantee of immunity for prosecution. He couldn't be prosecuted for anything he said in that testimony. And in the testimony, he said, yes, I destroyed all these documents. So I found a note from the FBI director to one of his agents saying, you got to stop chasing Gottlieb because he's got immunity for this crime. Now, you mentioned Gerald Ford, who became president immediately or soon after the Watergate scandal exploded. And you're absolutely right that Ford was dedicated to keeping the lid on all CIA scandals. When Congress began investigating the CIA, Ford was very upset. He didn't want them to do this. And his plan was to tell the world, I'm going to establish my own committee, and we're going to investigate. So Congress shouldn't do it. And he appointed, as the head of that commission, his own vice president, Nelson Rockefeller, who had a long connection to the CIA and to secret operations over many years. One of the first witnesses to come before the Rockefeller Commission was the new director of the CIA. That was William Colby. Colby started being honest. He started talking about some of the awful things that the CIA had done in the past. And during the first break, Nelson Rockefeller took him aside and said, why are you telling us all this? We'll understand if there's a lot of things you don't want to talk about. So the Rockefeller Commission was obstructed from finding the truth. And who obstructed it? Rockefeller himself. They didn't want to find out the truth. There's a great desire in the national security apparatus to say, whatever the CIA did, I don't want to know about it, but it must have been fine. And that's how you create a climate in which horrific abuses like MKUltra become possible.
Oh, indeed, indeed. One thing I'd like to mention for the audience, because you know, I probably mentioned it a long, long time ago with Joyce, but there was another program. Like Gottlieb was trying to pound a square peg into a round hole, but the concept of the Manchurian was originally termed the schizoid personality, and that was a Dr. Wilhelm Kudemeyer of the University of Heidelberg who was participating in the plot to kill Hitler. who was looking for a killing machine that could be turned on and turned off. And that person had to have the schizoid personality disorder, which means he shows emotional coldness, detachment, neither desires or enjoys close relationships, always chooses solitary activities, has little interest in sexual experiences, takes pleasures in few, if any, activities, lacks close friends and confidants, appears indifferent to praise or criticism of others, which kind of sounds like a lot of the lone gunman assassins that pop up here and there, that they have those things. He had an assistant. His assistant was named Volkmar Schmidt. Volkmar Schmidt got a job with Magnolia Oil, and he was in Texas in 1963 meeting someone called Lee Oswald. So there's a direct connect with that history in Germany and this event. And, you know, there may be other projects other than MKUltra that are never going to come out or see the light of day. And maybe
I think you're probably right. Yeah, I think you're right. And when I was doing the research for this book, Poisoner in Chief, I came up with another fascinating episode that I didn't know about. So James Angleton, who we mentioned earlier, that was the head of counterintelligence for the CIA, one of his other jobs was he was in charge of the liaison between the CIA and Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service. And he was very pro-Israel, pro-Mossad, and shared a lot with Mossad. Now, Angleton was one of the few people who knew what Gottlieb was doing and that there was an active project underway to try to do things, including, among other things, create a programmed killer. So, in a history of Israeli assassinations, I came across this fascinating story. The Israeli Mossad had a Palestinian prisoner at one point, and they decided they would program him to go back into the West Bank and then find and kill Yasser Arafat, the Palestinian leader at that time. So they spent months kind of brainwashing, as they called it, and programming this Palestinian prisoner. Finally, they gave him a gun, and they released him in a place close to where they knew Arafat was going to be passing. And it only took 6 hours for the guy to walk into a police station and say, here's my gun, the Israelis gave it to me, I'm supposed to kill Arafat. So it shows you not only that it's so difficult to program someone to do this, but that the methods that Gottlieb was developing to try to carry out these kinds of programmed killings were not limited to the United States. Other people were picking up on what Gottlieb was doing and trying to implement it for their own reasons. So it shows you how science can be so grotesquely distorted in the name of national security. And Gottlieb and his people were also very much victim to this syndrome that psychologists call confirmation bias. So that is, you take all evidence that supports what you already believe very seriously, and any evidence that says the contrary, you just ignore. So Gottlieb's people were consulting with prominent psychologists and asking them how to create mind control and how to create programmed killers. And a couple of these crackpots who were writing for men's magazines became real consultants to the CIA. But serious psychologists like Carl Menninger, who ran the major psychological clinic in America at that time in Kansas, wrote back and said, you're barking up a crazy tree. You cannot do this. It's impossible. So what do they do with that letter? Throw it away. It shows you how you get into a certain mindset. You don't want to hear any contradictory evidence, and that is a very dangerous syndrome, particularly when you have the life or death power over human beings that Gottlieb was given.
Well, one disturbing thing, I was reading about another doctor who was in this program, and many were, and they went to famous universities and such like that, but it was Jolly West, and how he shot an elephant at a zoo with 300,000 micrograms of LSD, and the thing died, a horrible, slow, convulsive death. And you just look at these people as they have, absolutely no more. Like, I think even the greatest fool around would go, like, what are you trying to prove? What could you possibly prove by shooting an elephant with this much LSD? It's too bad he didn't live to stomp you. But
I tell you, there's no limit to the extremes they went to. they had guys that were conducting experiments on fighting fish to see if they could get them to kill each other when being given certain drugs. And as you said, they shot an elephant full of LSD. What do you think you're going to get out of that? What does that have to do with science? It shows you how far people can go when given the imprimatur of a government-sponsored program. In many cases, like you and Cameron in Canada, these projects were nothing more or less than medical torture. They had no therapeutic value at all. But during the time they were going on, they were posited as being very important, not only for science, but for national security. And when you shake your head and wonder how crazy we could have been to believe that, you can't help but ask yourself, what about what might be going on now? All of the things that are in my book were totally secret. It was the greatest secret of the Cold War, the MK Ultra. What could be going on now that's equally secret with all the additional resources that the covert activities and the security apparatus has behind it now? I wonder, is there going to be another Stephen Kinzer in 50 years who's going to be writing a book about something that's going on now? I tell you, reading this book that I've written, or writing this book that I've written, Poisoner in Chief, really does put you in a position where you realize if this could have happened, what might be happening now? And it makes you a little more open to ideas and accusations that you might previously have dismissed as absurd.
Well, I pray to God that there are Stephen Kinzers in every generation. And I would encourage all our listeners to go to your website, stephenkinzer.com, to go to their local bookstore or Amazon or wherever they can find it, look up your name, and look at the vast trove of books you've written, especially Poisoner in Chief and such. You cannot go wrong by adding those to your library. We thank you, Stephen. The nation thanks you. The world thanks you. You are a fantastic researcher, and we will desire to have you back again for more.
Thank you so much for giving people like me a platform.
You're welcome. Thank you, Power Hour Nation. Until the next time, I'm George Bright.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.